Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Roy, Keane, player, pundit, and possibly the riskiest person we've ever chosen to profile on this podcast. Please don't hurt us, Roy. Legendary treble-winning captain at United, the joint most decorated Irish footballer of all time, played for Ireland at one World Cup and one World Cup training camp, more on that later, plus author. Last week we read Mick McCarthy's 2002 World Cup diary, and now it's time for Roy's book from the same year, Keane, the Autobiography. But what will the book club think of it? Find out in Mick McCarthy versus Roy Keane, part two.
The tension in my body all the way through, it reminded me of when I saw Uncut Gems.
It's kind of like an Eamon and Frankie situation, if anyone remembers.
We've got to be eating pasta all the time, Mick. We've got to be eating pasta all the time.
This is also during an era where he's living like Alan Partridge in a travel tavern.
Shakespearean. This is Shakespeare.
Hello and welcome to Football Book Club, the only book club where, instead of literary classics, each episode we read another footballer's autobiography. Less J.D. Salinger, more Alex Manninger.
Oh!
That's pretty good, right?
It's okay. Yeah, it's okay.
That one is hot off the press. I don't know if that's actually the correct... I always thought it was Alex Manninger, but I had to rework on pronouncing
it. It's Manninger.
Okay, that's good.
Football catcher in the rye.
Yeah, exactly. The football catcher. Everyone's favourite football catcher.
What position do you play? I'm the football catcher.
I primarily catch the ball. That's hot off the press, by the way, guys. I was sent that on Instagram 2 days ago.
Wow.
Ian O'Loughlin. Instagram, so thank you very much for that.
Well, you could tell it's hot off the press because, of course, a recent player like Alex Manninger.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, oh, I've got to get an Alex Manninger pun in. I'm James Bug, and over the weeks we'll be reading such classics as Steve Claridge's Beyond the Boot Camps and Ledley King's King. But today it's part two of Mick McCarthy versus Roy Keane, and we're reading Roy Keane's infamous Roy Keane, the Autobiography from 2002. And joining me to read it are Jack Bernhardt.
Hi.
And welcome to the show, the brilliant comedian, writer, and goal catcher, and the host of the Way They Were podcast, is Gronnie Maguire.
Hey guys, I'm just doing my job. I'm just doing my job.
Okay, that's fine.
Just doing my job.
Just doing your job. How are you?
I'm so excited to talk about this book. I cannot tell you. This is...
Yeah? Really?
This was a game... I read this book while I was listening to Barbara Streisand's memoir, and every now and then I got them muddled up in my head.
That is... I can imagine that takes some doing. Are they very similar characters, Roy and Barbara?
Listen, I'll get into it. Extremely similar, I think, personalities.
Okay, interesting. Do you think anyone's ever done that before, by the way? Roy Keane's book and Barbara Streisand's book at the same time.
That should have been the real challenge. We should have done Streisand versus Keane. That should have been it. Sack Met McCarthy off. That sounds miles
better. Two stroppy divas.
Yeah.
Two stroppy divas.
Am I right in thinking, because I spoke to you about this, Gronia, not long ago, Barbara Streisand's book, wasn't it enormous? Really, really long?
900 pages.
Oh boy.
Bloody hell.
Half the size of Roy Keane's, but no, Roy Keane's, but much shorter. Thanks.
Felt longer.
Yeah, we can't say too much bad about Roy. There was two reasons why I was wary about doing this book. One, because, you know, it's a very well-known football book, and there's a couple of things in there, which we'll get to later. Mick McCarthy and Alpha Inga Haaland, which everyone knows about. their thing. And second reason why is I...
Except me.
Yeah, sure, fair enough.
I have no idea.
Now you do, which is good. And secondly, the other reason why is I don't want to piss off Roy Keane. Of all the people in the world, I don't want to piss off with this. It's Roy.
Can I tell you, when my husband... it's so awful. We've been married nearly a year and a half and I still say...
Husband.
When he sometimes when he's watching the football, as you boys do, he has it on and I'm not paying any attention to it and I'm just popping about doing my own little thing. And every now and then I'll hear Roy Keane's voice saying, "Maguire's just lazy." And I just terrifies me.
Is that what kind of made you want to choose this book, Grania? What was it that made you want to go for Roy? Because we had some options, I think.
Okay. No, it had to be Roy. It was only going to be Roy.
Okay.
It was only going to be Roy. So my background, I know nothing about football, really. Basically nothing. But I was a young person in Ireland in the 90s with the whole, what's his name? The
Jack
guy
Charlton?
In the hash that
Roy, Jack Charlton.
Jack Charlton. That's it. Jackie's Army. Oh my God. I remember one time coming home from primary school going, I think we might win the World Cup. Remember my sister saying, yeah, we're probably going to win it now because we bet Italy. So it was like, we actually are probably going to win it now. So I remember that excitement. And then I remember Roy, obviously, when he was playing Man United, you know, the sort of the glamour of Man United in the 90s. And then I remember vaguely, just kind of like a folk memory of Saipan, Roy losing his head, and the whole country couldn't talk about anything else for about 2 years. So I've always found him a fascinating personality.
He definitely is. He definitely is.
Yes.
And he's got two books. Obviously, we're only doing the original one, which came out around the same time as McCarthy's book, just before, I think we found out. Wasn't that right, James?
August 2002.
Jack, I just asked myself that question. Wasn't that right, James? We're recording this quite late at night. So, oh, hang on. What was that noise?
It's Roy. It's Roy. Yeah, Roy. Fuck.
Roy's get in the down. Air vents. He's in the air vents. Now, last time out, Grania, you weren't here, but we read Mick McCarthy's World Cup diary with a fellow writer, Andy Walton. I wasn't sure if the noise was going to be for Andy Walton or for that. Sorry. When you I was like, wow, rude. It went down averagely, fair to say, Jack. Yeah, it got 5.66, I think. It was that was long. Now, that was a long book.
That was long, and it felt longer than it was as well. So, yeah.
And I had high hopes for this book. Were those hopes misplaced? Let's find out if Roy can beat Mick as we read Roy Keane's Keane, the autobiography. So, over the show, we're going to be going into the book in depth. There's a quiz and a dramatic reading. Everything he does is dramatic, basically. So it's very hard to narrow down and find one dramatic reading.
11.
Yes.
He's 1 or 11.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's either doing two
shots,
options.
Eating kebabs, or having a nervous breakdown because, you know, his football kit isn't ironed.
Yeah.
There is no five.
Frequently both, I'd say. He could be having a 1 and 11 day at the same time.
It's an extremely dramatic book. But first, do you want to hear what Amazon's saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the book has 4.6 stars from, get this, 551 ratings. Oof! And remember, this book came out pre-Amazon? I think probably, 2002?
No, not pre-Amazon.
So sorry, but yeah, maybe internet being big. Yeah. Again, that's probably not true.
What is that out of?
That's out of 5.
4.6.
That is a ridiculously high score.
It's very good from that amount of ratings, I would say.
Yeah.
To put it in context, Gary Lineker's favourite football story has 1 star from 1 rating. So.
Now, hang on. that is putting it in no kind of context.
I agree. Here's a 5-star review from Gladys Hindman. Which reads, brilliant if you are a fan. My husband isn't a book reader. Got this for holidays. Holidays were cancelled, but once he started to read, he couldn't put it down. So sorry about that, Gladys. But that's what she thinks. What did you all think of the book?
I want to know more about the holiday being cancelled. And the fact that she was like, well, at least we get to spend some time together. And he was like, nope.
Nope, I'm gonna read that book. But what did you all think of it? Grania, as the guest, please kick us off.
I loved it.
Ooh.
You know what it reminded me of?
We very rarely get that. Sorry, on the show, we very rarely get someone say I loved it. That's a real change for us.
I loved it. I read it in less than a week.
Wow.
And, you know, genuinely, it reminded the tension in my body all the way through. It reminded me of when I saw in the cinema Uncut Gems.
Okay, yeah, okay. That's a very good comparison. That's extremely good comparison. Yeah.
It's the football version of Uncut Gems.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's this complicated anti-hero driven by these demons that he's only beginning to really admit, compulsively self-destructing, getting irritated. The whole chapter just about getting tickets for his friends. I nearly threw the book at a wall. I couldn't handle it.
I think Jack will get onto that later. I know that particularly irked him. He messaged me about that as well. But yeah.
A page turner, a thriller.
Jack,
an absolute thriller.
Jack, I have a feeling you're going to say you don't quite agree with Gronja, which is going to make some great material.
I have never hated a football book more.
Whoa! This is so polarizing.
I despise this book.
Wow.
With every fiber of my being, I hate it.
God.
I hate it so much.
What was the worst? What's the book you've disliked the most so far on the podcast? Hasselbanks, maybe? Penance?
I didn't like Hasselbanks very much. I didn't like Penance, but it had a kind of, there's a kind of smarmy, like, arrogance to it that I quite enjoyed. This is so devoid of joy, I think. And it's so devoid of, as a result, I find it so devoid of purpose. I kind of was like reading it, and by the end of it, I was like, what is football? Why do I care about football? This man, like, has dedicated his life to football. He talked about it. He won 4 Premier League titles. He won the treble. He won 2 doubles. He has been the most successful football player ever, but he is the most miserable, hateful, joyless man. And it just made me go, like, what are any of us doing with our lives? What's Roy doing in his life, obviously, but then, like, also it by extension, like, what purpose do any of us, if he has no joy, then what are any of us doing? Jeez. I'm never going to be as successful as him, therefore, and he's not happy, so
why
am I ever going to be happy? Yeah, what's the point?
Oh, we've done it after 70 episodes and we've broken Jack. There we go.
Really, 70 really books in. Broken.
Oh, wow.
It made me very sad and very angry.
God. Gronja, any rebuttal?
Well, I
this is now going to be the episode.
I think that's what it's going to be.
It's like a tennis match.
I think maybe that's why I liked it. Because I think you're right. There isn't a lot about football in it. I think it's more about like the nature of, like, obsession.
Yes.
It's like obsession.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really interesting because, like I said, at the start, so when he's just sort of an ambitious young footballer, what I found so, and it's really interesting, like, when it shifted, when did it change? Because he was like this, and I was talking to my husband about it, and he said it was quite common, like, you know, the idea we have about footballers, and they're all like weighing out their pasta and like doing all these, like, exercising and, like, as if they're training for NASA, is like a relatively new concept.
Yeah. And the, like, sports science the early side chapters of things. Yeah. Of, yeah.
Yeah. And it's reading the early chapters where he's like, when he was playing for
Nottingham Forest. Yeah. Yeah.
Nottingham Forest. Yeah. And he would be like on the latch from Sunday to Wednesday.
Yeah.
And then sort of like, all right. So he's like, and then arrived like training hungover. So we see that person then change. Jackie, exactly like you said, to this, like, driven, obsessive person, like, obsessed with this perfectionism and his lack of self-awareness.
Yes. This is what Jack
said. Towards the end is so fascinating.
I hate to make my private messages from Jack public, but Jack also used the word lack of self-awareness in a message to me earlier. About me. About this book.
But I think that's right. And I think what's interesting is that I do think it's almost, I think what I find quite frustrating about it is that he's so close to getting it, because he's so close to getting that self-awareness. But throughout the book, there's a kind of, it seems to fluctuate between self-loathing, like, of who he used to be, in an almost like evangelical manner. Like, he's almost like like, there's a bit, there's a really upset, I found this bit really upsetting, where he says, like, I recently watched a couple of videos of me playing for Man United when I first got there, like, to the club, and I was surprised by how average I was. Like, not like now, where I'm really good. And it was sort of like that like level of self-loathing and perfectionism, and nothing's ever going to be good enough. It's half that, and it's half then also, the world is wrong, and I am the only sane person, and I'm the only person who can fix it. And it's sort of neither are correct. I understand why both exist, but
yes,
yeah.
But does a football book have to be correct in that way?
No, I think that's
why I actually think the book is good. I'm Cyber Gronya in that way, because it is a pretty perfect insight into Roy Keane's mind. I imagine I do think it works very well in that regard. And yeah, actually, one thing it reminded me of, weirdly, do you remember Wayne Rooney's book we read,
yeah,
Jack? Obviously,
yeah.
Gronya, obviously, I'm assuming you haven't read that book as well. If you have, I don't know why.
Not yet. No spoilers.
But do you remember Rooney's book was a bit like, bang, the ball hits the back of the net. I feel great. This kind of thing. It was like kind of like a strategic consciousness. And
yeah.
Roy Keane's book is a little bit like that, but miles better. It was a bit like Wayne Rooney, the person who wrote Wayne Rooney's book, read Roy Keane's book, was like, we're going to try and do that. But there's just nothing interesting really going on in the same way as Keane.
Rooney had a sense of joy. I think this is true.
He definitely had a sense of joy.
There's also really upset, not upset. I'm going to say it's upsetting. There's a bit in it where he talks about there's no such thing as glory. There's just vindication. And that made me so upset conceptually, that idea that like, there's no such thing as being, there's a bit where he says there's no such thing as happiness. Happiness is not being afraid. That's his version of happiness. Like
I find this fascinating.
So it is fascinating.
You imagine there'd be more joy in Roy Keane?
No, but I think it just made me so upset about that someone could live like that. It really made me like angry and upset.
What I found so fascinating, bit, and sorry for
no, no, definitely,
is that like, you know, we have this obsession nowadays with balance about like, do this, but do that, and blah, blah, blah. And that I find that so boring. Like, allow extraordinary people to be strange and odd and maybe unhappy. And then they achieve all these incredible things, but it comes at a sacrifice.
I agree.
And I think like, take Barbara Streisand or Martin Scorsese. Are they easy people to be around? No, they're not. And this is what Roy Keane is. It's about the nature of obsession.
The Three Musketeers. Martin Scorsese, Barbara Streisand,
Roy Keane. In a weird way, artistically, I understand. I think it's a dangerous game to play.
Yes.
Which is that you have to be somehow a terrible, you know, like, in order to be talented, you must be a dickhead. You must like be I also think there is something that Roy doesn't understand, even though he says it constantly, about football being a team game, and this idea that really one person can't win the whole thing, and you have to be okay with the concept of appreciating other people. Like, he talks about, you know, how Ferguson's really good at managing different people, and like, you know, sometimes you shout, sometimes you don't, but at the same time, Keane has a very specific way of doing things that he expects everyone else to do as well, to the point that he can't be happy if they show some deviation from that.
To put this in context, though, this book came out in 2002, so this is a good time into his United career, but
yeah,
kind of at the peak-ish of his powers. He's what, about 31 in this book or so? Maybe
I think he's approaching 30, yeah.
Maybe they're approaching 30, okay, sure. So I guess at this point of his career, he really is, like, it'd be very different to if he wrote this book today, for example.
I think this is what I really want to know, and I kind of, even though I hated this book with a passion, I really quite want to read the next book.
Yeah, because I want to see his joy come into his life later.
Exactly.
When he's
that's
out
my
of that
fear.
Mode where he's got to keep achieving and keep achieving and keep
but
achieving.
But I worry that he wouldn't, because I don't think there's any point where he seems to like just stop and be like, okay, this is enough. Not like, therefore,
but he did. It's weird because he did kind of. Did he retire quite early? I can't remember if he quite retired quite early. But
He had a fallout with Ferguson, and then went
and
to
Celtic.
And then
played very briefly, and then left Celtic as well.
But I feel like that. I don't know that sort of speaks of someone who can never really be happy, and it just sort of. Maybe I could read this again with less emotion and I'd be like, oh, actually, it's quite interesting. But I just, at the time, I something I texted James, within the first like four pages, I've written fuck off five times in the margins because I just couldn't, because it's such, I think it's just such a, it's such a horrible mindset that pervades this book so much that I can't separate myself from it.
One thing I will have a go at him for is, again, Gronny, sorry to bring up a book that we did before, but Roy somehow even managed to take the joy out of Jason McAteer's Harry Ramsden Fish and Chip Challenge.
Yes, he did!
All the way back in series one.
I did find that very confusing. I read that about three times and I even Googled the name of the chip shop because I was like, I'm missing something.
Harry Ramsden. Yeah.
I was like, what is going
on?
So apparently
this came up in Jason McAteer's book and it's really funny.
I think he was one of the players who tried it, didn't he? I think.
Who tried it and failed miserably.
Yeah.
Basically, they all had, before quite an important match, Jack Charlton was like, we're going to do the Harry Ramsden fish and chip challenge where you have to eat a massive fish and chips.
Yeah.
And then they played 2 days later. And of course, they lost horribly.
All sick.
Roy is right to bring it up as an example of.
Well, I'm sure that's not all that was brought up.
Yeah.
But
imagine Roy Keane watching on as that was happening. There.
I know. Fury.
Just drinking his Gatorade and eating his boiled pasta. Just like sitting up.
Except this is okay. This is another thing that I think I found quite annoying. It's not as if it was Roy Keane, the sports scientist, the wonderful person, like that concept of like Roy Keane being really into his like pasta and really into his like fitness and all the rest of it. Mm. That is
really into pasta.
He's really like into
what's that? Like
Gia De Campo. Yeah,
Gia De Campo. Yeah, exactly. I was about to say Bruno Tognolo. I was going, that's the wrong Italian. That's the wrong Italian. Who do I mean?
But he like. It's again weird because he sort of sets up in the book, but actually, like, if you look at the timelines, like when he talks to Mick McCarthy, there's a bit at the end or towards the end when they're talking about like qualifying for the World Cup, he says like, we've got to be eating pasta all the time, Mick, we've got to be eating pasta all the time, and Gino De Campo is there as well being like, this is great for me. And Mick's like, I completely agree, we're definitely gonna eat pasta. And then the next time they have a training camp, they're eating cheese sandwiches, and Roy Keane's like, what the fuck is this?
That's one of my favorite lines in the book, that exact line. Fucking cheese sandwiches an hour and a half before training, 24 hours before a vital World Cup qualifier. No one is safe from breaking this.
His fury. But what's interesting is if you actually look at the timeline of that, like he is still heavily drinking with United, like in the late 90s and in the early noughties. Like it's not as if he sort of like had this moment where he was like, and then I learnt my lesson. I think
why he gets so annoyed in some ways, because he knows that he doesn't always conform to his perfect idea of what it is. He knows he should be able to control that anger and not get sent off in matches or not go too mad a night out and have to go out for drinks with all his teammates, which also I found a very strange thing, that Roy Keane feels like he has to be the life of the party, which I was not a Roy Keane.
That was also,
even with Dennis Irwin's mates. That was a really interesting side to him in that. But I do feel that like sometimes those kind of people get more annoyed at other people's flaws when they see those flaws in themselves in some ways. And I think that was actually, you know, reading between the lines a little bit, which I like to do.
I think there's two things going on, and I don't know if we're getting to, but tell me if we're getting to this bit later. But I think what I find fascinating is that he's got so much rage. Mm-hmm. And it's hinted at, and the way it seems like, so I knew nothing about his football career at all, but it was like every now and then, it was like red cards just kept happening to him. It was like he was going for a run, and he was having a lovely time, kicking the ball, and bang, he got a red card. Yep. And it kept sabotaging him and sabotaging him. Well, I don't know if we'll get into the Euro final, whatever it was.
The hoo-ha.
He completely... He sabotaged that for himself.
Oh, you mean the Champions League final?
Champions League final.
He missed the semi. Yeah.
He got made to the semi. Sorry, against Juventus, wasn't it? Yeah, and then missed the final. Yeah.
But he absolutely sabotaged that for himself. There's no reflection whatsoever of my anger issues, my lack of control, cause me to lose that.
Yeah.
It immediately goes to this obvious burning jealousy for all the other players that he refuses to acknowledge that he sabotaged it for himself, and he never says anything about it.
And And he also, like, spends the time going, like, football is a team sport. Like, oh, the most important thing I learned is that football is a team sport. Like, he talks about, like, when he was at Forest, like, oh, he thought, you know, he could do it himself, but actually found out that football is a team sport. And then in that situation, and in many other situations, when he can't be part of the team, he just has a fury and a rage towards everyone else, which is sort of like, you have to understand, as you say, football is a team sport, and that... You know, he did very well in that Champions League semi-final before he got, well, when he, even after he got the booking, because he sort of drove everyone forward. And that, I think, has often been sort of like cited as like Roy Keane, the selfless person who's sort of, you know, doing stuff for the team. But really, it was interesting reading that, because afterwards it sort of felt like he just felt this annoyed at himself, but also at the team for sort of like, that he had to be the one who got everyone up, and therefore that meant he got a booking, and therefore he's out of this Champions League final, and therefore, like, there's a lot of like, it's both my fault constantly, and I should hurt myself consistently over and over again and never say that I'm good enough for joy and happiness. And also everyone else it's everyone else's fault, and I hate them so much for what they make me do to myself. From a psychological point, it's a really interesting insight into Roy Keane's life, or into Roy Keane's head, but I don't want to be in Roy Keane's head.
I agree. People are, and I know, not to quite the same extent, but there's plenty of bits I found pretty relatable with him, that especially just largely just beating yourself up mainly all the way through it. But I actually thought it was very frank in that respect.
But I suppose what I would have liked, and I suppose this is what I hope that happens in the second book, is that he is able to acknowledge
that. Which we're not reading, by the way, just in case anyone gets excited on the podcast. Oh, that's not happening.
I'm not reading. Oh, no, I sort of do want to. Yeah, if you go back on it, as you so frequently do, James, on your promises that we won't read a certain book. But that, like, I saw it felt a little bit like a joke without a punchline, or like there's no relief. There's no, like, as Gronje says, to say, I was sabotaging myself, or I was so angry and I couldn't see that I was sabotaging myself, and I couldn't see that I was beating myself up unfairly, or that, you know, perfectionism is a good and necessary thing to have, but it actually kind of ruined my career when you think about it. Like, because, as you say, James, he hadn't got to that stage of his career yet, of the end point. I just hope that after it's all happened, he's able to both A, reflect on that he had a very good career and he did very well, and also see that, like, he didn't need to cause himself that amount of pain. Because sort of the thing that comes out at the end of the book is basically like, yes, I should continue to be horrible to myself and to other people, because that's the only way I can be successful, which is an awful message to have.
Yes, but do you think, cynically, he is kind of coming out fighting at this point? Because obviously this is just after the stuff that we're going to talk to later, the training camp with our friend Mick. I'm not taking no sides here. Gronje is taking sides here.
Gronje just did a thumbs down.
Thumbs down, yeah. Obviously, he is coming out fighting at this point. And he kind of wants to show, like, why his standards are higher than the Irish football team standards at that point, because that's kind of what he's rallying against at this moment. I'm not saying that Roy Keane's written 300 pages to be that petty, but also I'm not putting it past him entirely.
Well, I also think it's not a great time for him to release an autobiography, except for the fact that he wants to answer these criticisms on Saipan. Like that's basically the only reason this autobiography has happened here.
Do you know, it's like this autobiography, it's like his reputation album.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's like, this is my petty phase.
But like, I don't know, because at the same time, there, as you say, James, and, you know, there's a lot of, like, managing his reputation and managing his, like, you know, he's got to come out fighting. But he also talks about how much he hates the idea of, like, PR, and he hates the idea of, like, putting on a show for anyone. So I can't quite tell if he is aware of that inconsistency, or if he's sort of like portraying himself as the hard man, or portraying himself as the, as Gronje says, putting himself into the reputation, like taking his life events and making that a part of his story, and therefore carefully like curating a narrative for himself, or if he is just so rage driven and angry that he can't see the fact that he is being managed by people around him, and that everything he hates about football is sort of, he is sort of guilty of that as well.
I don't think we've ever gone this long Maybe it's the standard of book we normally read, but I don't think we ever got half an hour or so without actually mentioning any one thing from the book.
I'm so sorry.
It's just all about what's kind of not being written.
It's Shakespeare. It is. This book is Shakespeare.
I'm glad you see that too, Gráinne. And actually, just sticking on Irish football for a second. As we were saying, Roy Keane pulls no punches.
He goes 2 feet in.
He goes two feet in at all times. And one person who I was kind of surprised, I'm not anymore having read the book, but I was quite surprised when I saw it the first time reading. Jack Charlton, what did you think of that, Gráinne? He wasn't very complimentary to him at all.
This was a game changer because like a lot of Irish people, I think Jack Charlton was so famous. He was beloved. Mm. He was like every Irish house, a picture of the Pope, John F. Kennedy, Jack Charlton. He was beloved. He was advertising everything. He was fishing with Jack Charlton. And reading this book, I was so angry.
With who?
With Jack Charlton.
With Jack Charlton. Okay,
interesting.
I was 100% Team Roy.
Interesting.
Wow, okay.
Because there's sort of two different things. So sort of I don't know if you guys have experienced this, but it's like you come from a sort of small town or small community and you leave to pursue a career. Mm-hmm. And you do well in that career in another place. And then when you come back, the amateurishness of it will get you like nothing else. It's so frustrating. And I think I remember like the few times, I hope I'm not as awful now, but I know a few times where, went away to London to comedy writing, blah, blah, blah. And then when I go home and I watch Irish television, Irish sketch shows, I'm like, this is dog shit. Oh my God, what is this? This is bad. So I kind of understand you just are so much more, when you come back to your own community, you're so much harder on it. So I think that's a big thing here. But also, FAI is corrupt. It's so bad. It is a joke. And I can see Roy's frustration with how amateurs and how they played into the whole like, oh, Irish people were just happy to be here. And it is kind of grating. We don't really take soccer as seriously as a sport. It's always like, oh yeah, we've got the best fans. That's what we do. We've got the best fans. And for somebody who's as talented as Roy is at the top of his career, and he sees how talented the team is,
because it was a good team.
Imagine, it was something so frustrating that you've got like Jack Charlton and Mick McCarthy, these British men lecturing him about having a bit of national pride. All he wants is to do it properly. That's all he wanted.
Yeah, with the Jack Charlton, Jack Charlton kind of thinks it acts as though he's doing them a favour in Roy's kind of world, really, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Mick McCarthy's slightly different because at least Mick McCarthy has got a bit of a attachment to Roy. As far as I know, Jack Charlton isn't anywhere. But I don't know. That could be wrong. Maybe Bobby.
But I do definitely see the Jack
Charlton
thing.
At least Mick was captain
also,
and stuff like that in the past.
Yeah, so. there's a kind of, and I think Jack Charlton also, like, it was interesting hearing like the lack of tactics and stuff as frustrating for Roy. I do think there's something that's slightly unfair that he never really talks about, which is that the difference between like club football tactics and national team tactics are so different because you only have a certain amount of time.
Exactly.
To train
tournament
with them.
Tactics are very different. That is true.
Very different. And so it's really unfair to sort of be like, well, it's not as, you know, Man United says. Yeah, because you're playing with Man United week in, week out.
Exactly.
And you're not going to get that with Ireland. So therefore, quite a lot of national team football is basically just have a go. have a go, guys. We don't have much time. Yeah.
And also, I mean, as good as the Ireland team was, they're still not. I know, Gráinne, you and your sister thought you were going to win the World Cup at that time. It would have been a struggle. Like there was a.
Sinead was confident.
I don't want to doubt Sinead, but like this was Brazil with Romário and stuff like that. This kind of time and some really great teams. It's obviously sometimes when they're probably going to be the underdog in most of this kind of games. Sometimes you need some more. You're not going to beat them necessarily by playing your football around them. You've kind of got to go for slightly more long balls, tactics, that kind of thing. However, I do agree that it was a bit, that there was definitely flaws of Jack's in there.
Just as a bit of nuance, so Eamon Dunphy, who ghost wrote this book, is a famous sports journalist in Ireland. And I remember in the 90s, he was infamous, like really infamous, for being incredibly critical of Jack Charlton.
Ah,
like it was like he was notorious because he was like on all the after all the the matches, he would always really tear into Jack Charlton. And he was the only person who did. And it was it really because he was basically a saint. So it was, he became like a real controversial figure in Ireland because he was so mean by Jack Charlton.
I think that's why Roy sought him out.
Yeah, I was like, you. So,
yeah.
You're the... Write my book. I hate him too.
That's so interesting because then Mick McCarthy on his book teamed up with Cahill someone or I can't remember his surname.
Devon,
Hates Roy Keane. So they really, That's some very important subtext, I think. And really does, it's kind of like an Eamon and Frankie situation, if anyone remembers. What was it called?
F-U Right Back.
Yeah. That was the sequel, but what was the original one called? I Don't Want You Back. Was the first one called I Don't Want You Back?
Yeah, it probably was I Don't Want You Back.
Yeah.
F-A-U Right Back.
Yeah.
F-A-I-U Right Back.
Very good. Very good. Has anyone got an out of context Roy Keane for me, please?
Okay, I got one.
Okay.
I didn't find there were that many in this book.
I had like five or six. So
really? Yeah. Okay. Nicknamed the Baby-Faced Assassin, Ollie really was both baby-faced and an assassin.
Grania, do you have one?
I gasped when I read this out loud. My first few weeks as a professional player with Forest confirmed what I suppose I'd always known. The world was full of bluffers, con men, and whingers.
Oh, God. And that comes up a lot. Do your out of context.
No, go on. Say your thought.
I think the one thing that really occurred to me in this book is that I feel like Roy, and that's a really good example of it, Roy creates a narrative in his mind and then finds evidence to back that narrative up. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a big one, this idea that the world is full of con men, bluffers, and PR people. Mm-hmm. And he gets that into his head quite quickly. And then from that moment on, he is then throughout his life looking for bluffers and con men and people to be like, this backs up what I was saying before. And similarly with the Irish national team, Grania, I think you're probably absolutely right, and the FIA is corrupt and terrible. But I do also think that once...
The thoughts of the contributors, like, not necessarily the thoughts of the podcast,
Am I a contributor or am I the podcast? Yeah, I can't tell.
You're a contributor as well.
Interesting, okay. Well, your James told me in private as well that he agrees. No, this idea that like the Ireland national team is, you know, they're only there for a good time and they're only going to do like, they're only there to have fun and they've got the best fans and off they go again. And I think that while that may have been true in 90 and 94, having read Mick's book, I don't think it is true in 2002, but I don't think, there was never going to be enough evidence to convince Roy of the change.
Yep,
He's not someone who is able to change his, like, despite the fact he talks about, I changed my mind and, you know, his change of mind is quite a big topic in the Mick McCarthy section. Like, he doesn't. I think once he has an idea in his head, then he will follow it, just regardless of if the facts are there, or he'll find the facts and pick them out. Because there's another bit as well where he says, once they'd won the Champions League, the height of their thing, he believes that like complacency crept in, and it's because someone like offhandedly said, we don't need to ever win another trophy again, do we, lads? Yeah. And Roy takes that phrase and is like, never win another trophy again! Never win another trophy again!
But it doesn't count, because I didn't win it. It doesn't count!
I think that's definitely an implication there. He sort of talks about, like, we were lucky to win that trophy against the Germans, because they were having a shit day and we were lucky to win it. You're like, you won the fucking Champions League! You were treble winners! Just enjoy your life, Roy! Anyway, once he says that, I think once he gets that into his head of like, we, you know, the complacency has crept in, he sort of then creates this idea that complacency has overtaken Man United, I think, despite the fact that they go on to win the next two titles.
That is very true. You are absolutely right with that, Jack. And I agree.
Yeah.
Can I read my out of context line now?
I'm so... this is why I said... Here we go.
So complicated. This is the...
It was just when you said it, it really reminded me of that. I'm sorry, sorry.
No, fair enough. Unlike people, dogs don't talk shite. Anyway, cool. There we go. That is my one. Time now for a break. But when we return, we'll be talking Roy the Ticket Tout. And yes, we're heading to Saipan. Hello, James here, and we at Football Book Club want you. That's right,
you to join something special, something exclusive. We want you to join the Football Book Club Club. The Football Book Club Club is the home of even more Football Book Club action. And now it's cheaper than ever to become a full member at just £3.50 a month. There's three tiers. By signing up to our Bookworm tier, you get an exclusive members-only episode of Football Book Club every fortnight, filling the gap between regular episodes with more book club fun and, frankly, a frighteningly deeper analysis of whatever book we're reading the episode. Plus, you get access to all the bonus episodes recorded so far. There's over 20 of them on there. Well, 20. And most excitingly, you'll get your hands on a special edition Money Can't Buy bookmark you can put inside your personal copy of Darren Huckabee's Hucks. All that for just £3.50 a month. For context, that's a tenth of the cost of a cameo message from Ian Dowie. And a cameo is what, 30 seconds? For that price, you get 10 episodes. That's 3.5 hours of content. I dread to think what you have to pay to get 3.5 hours of content from Ian Dowie. You'd have to remortgage your house. But I digress. And if that's still not right for you, if you really love the show, you can join the Super Bookworm tier. And if you like the show but don't want to pay that much, you can support the show for just £1 a month on the Casual Reader tier. You won't get the bonus episodes, but yes, you will get that bookmark. Head to patreon.com/footballbookclub for more details. So if you enjoy the show, please consider joining up. It really does help us to keep making the show, because books don't grow on trees. But they are trees, kind of. And trees are expensive. But the Football Book Club Club isn't. So join today at patreon.com/footballbookclub or by following the link in the episode notes. See you back at the clubhouse.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to Football Book Club, where we are still reading Roy Keane's Keane, the autobiography, and we are still joined by Gráinne Maguire.
I'm still just doing my job.
Still just doing your job.
No joy in her life. She's not in it for the glory, she's in it for the vindication.
And we'll see if Gráinne has any joy at the end of the podcast, when she's done with the podcast. That's really what I want to see. That's happened. Jack, we mentioned it earlier a little bit, but I know you wanted to talk about some tickets.
I find Roy and tickets fascinating and incredibly upsetting. Mm. Again, like all things in this book, really. Incredibly upsetting and very fascinating. He talks about how when he got to... Forest, when he was at Forest and they got to the final of the FA Cup in 1991, mm-hmm. he talks about the build-up to that against Spurs, and yes, yeah. Spurs won. Yeah. We're all very happy for you, James.
Just 30 years ago.
About, this was his first final, and you really expect it to be like, oh my god, like I was really excited for it. And he talks about like, actually it was a bit of a nightmare because everyone in Ireland, it seems, really wanted to get tickets from Roy, and Roy felt like he couldn't say no. So there's a lot of like people calling Roy up and saying, "Oh, can you help me out?" Or like, "I got to get tickets for, you know, my brother and my dad and all the rest of it." And Roy asks the like, he asks around quite a lot. He buys tickets. There's a bit where he talks about like how he bought extra tickets for this for the final in case someone else was coming, but in the end they didn't need them, so they went to waste, and he's furious about it. And it affects him really badly. He says that by the time he goes out on the pitch, he's like dead in his feet because he's so worried about tickets. And it's bonkers. It is absolutely bonkers that this man playing in the biggest match of his life is so obsessed with like tickets and making sure that everyone has enough tickets to go around.
Yeah.
And he says at the end, which this is the thing that I found really interesting, he said, "I learned something really important that day. I should never ever worry about anything but football in the build-up to a big match." And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. You're absolutely right. Give that to someone else. You're completely right. What happens literally the next year? Literally, when he's like, he gets to Man United, and he's like, well, then of course the tickets thing started up again. Every fucking week, people asking me for tickets.
It's incredible. We've never had anything like this before in a book. It actually was. We've had it mentioned a little bit before how you know, everyone will kind of come out the woodwork and try and get tickets off you, and
then you only get a certain amount jokingly. Before.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas Roy, it like for chapters and chapters, it plays in his mind. It really does.
It consumes him.
It does.
He's more worried about it than anything else. Mm-hmm. And it's just interesting because you're talking about like Dennis, you know, his desire to please people and his desire to like, you know, make sure that no one goes without and no one can be.
No one thinks worse of him in Ireland as well.
Yes.
Like people like who he vaguely knows, family, friends, and stuff like that. He doesn't want them gossiping about him behind his back in Cork and stuff. Yeah.
Which is, I think, points to so insecure. Such an insecure guy. Like, to
careful,
the point
Jack,
where he talked...
Don't call him that.
No, you know what? I don't care.
These are the thoughts of the friend of the show, Jet Bernhardt, not James
You
Berg,
know what?
Or Gronny McGrath.
The FA is corrupt,
but
and Roy Keane is insecure.
So that bit of the book, it was like a stress dream. The whole thing, it was like a stress dream. And it plays to your worst fears, like... I will never be able to experience joy. I will always sabotage it for myself. No matter what I do, I will find something. And we've all been at times in our life where we thought, if I just get this, then everything will be perfect.
Fine.
And I will be happy. And then if we're not in our good headspace, we sabotage it for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And to see somebody like that ruin, like destroy his own joy, is so fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that is amazing about it, and it's a little bit tied into this idea of like the bullshitters and the whingers and the people we talk about,
the bluffers,
the important thing to remember is that like he talks about how he doesn't need these people, and like, oh, agents are only just, you know, conniving people who take money and they kind of want to, you know, make you move and all the rest of it, and that's why I don't really need an agent apart from the one agent who I have, and he's good. Like like I don't need anyone else. Roy can do it himself. And then like the next page is like, I have to deal with this admin, and god, it was a faff. And you're like, Roy, get someone in, just get an assist, get one of these bluffers, get one of these like PR people.
That's the one thing bluffers are good for.
Bluffers are so
get
fucking
rid of
good. They're so good at getting like just sorting out the admin shit.
That's true. The most joy in the book, Jack, which you kind of neglected to mention, is when he's made Man United captain, but not for the right reason, only because he's now in control of the tickets. He hasn't got to like ask the captain for more tickets. He's now the one who gets to choose how many you have.
He said it was like a double-sided coin, because first of all, obviously, I didn't have to ask anyone for tickets, and I suddenly, you know, people are coming to me. But also, then other people start coming out and being like, well, you definitely can get tickets now, can't you, Roy? So now I have to get tickets for everyone! Like, Roy, just take a break. Just give the tickets to someone else.
I really hope that doesn't happen anymore with Roy. I hope Roy, because I can imagine people still probably thinking get loads of tickets for United games and Forest games.
Well,
or whatever Sky match he's doing and stuff.
He's probably made himself enough of a pariah at United that doesn't happen. And also that at Sky, like, he sort of has this reputation as being like, I feel like when it's definitely this, and I hope it doesn't happen now, because I also hope that Roy is happy and secure in his in himself, where he doesn't feel like he needs to prove himself to people who will never be satisfied, which is, as Grunya says, the people you go back to at home. Like, he's...
Do you think Micah Richards saved him?
Well, yeah, hanging around
with Micah Richards on Sky all day, just laughing and being a silly guy has saved his life.
There is a really funny, I think it's a video with Micah Richards and where they're just sort of like, Micah's laughing and like Roy Keane is talking about like a certain type of food with someone and he seems to be having a really nice time out in the pub. It just seems quite like chill and happy. Yeah. And I do hope that he is just, I don't know. I hope the front that he has now is an actual front and not like his actual personality, because that would break my heart. Mm. But like this thing of, you know, when you go back home and you want to say, look how successful I am, but you also want to make sure that no one's like, oh, who does he think he is? Which is a big thing that comes up here a lot. Like, those people, there'll always be someone will always find a
whenever
reason
I go back to
Missoula,
Chelmsford. Yeah.
Whenever James hits faces at the weekend, that's what they're going.
Here he is.
Oh, talking about Anton Ferdinand. Yeah. But it is, those people will never really be satisfied, also because they exist in Roy's mind, really. He's never going to be satisfied with their answers, which is, we're proud of Roy, because he's always afraid that someone's going to turn around and go like, well, you know, that Roy Keane, I think there's something quite sad about the fact that he's trying to please them through the tickets. Yeah.
Is there something, this might be a bit of a tangent, argument? Mm-hmm. That Roy's tragedy is that he exists in this transitional space, if you're talking about football culture, between the old school masculinity of like going for a pint and not really bothering, and then he then goes into this new world. He's in this transition
sports
into
science world. Yeah.
Sports science, Beckham's, brands, Instagram, and he's bits into neither.
I think that's a very good point. Actually, that's a very. Good
I think
point.
It's. A, I think it's a good point.
I think there is space for that tangent.
The tangent accepted. I think it's true, and I think that we've done a couple of footballers who occupy this space, and I think that Jason McAteer is one of them.
Ginola occupies
that sort of space of like someone who started playing football before the Premier League became massive, and Teddy Sheringham is actually another one, and Letizia as well. Like, I think
Sheringham started playing football
in the early 1900s. I think what's interesting, from my perspective about Keane, is I don't think that's the source of his anger, and I don't think that's like the I don't think he would have been happy in the 80s or happy in the 70s. Mm-hmm. I think that he would be perpetually furious, and I think that maybe the bullshitters and the money that came into the game was a good target. I also think that from how he talks about it, even before that, it's not as if he was like, like I became a sports scientist, like, you know, I bought into the Arsene Wenger stuff, and then I look back at my old life and I hated it, and like, I couldn't face being in either thing. I think it's that he just seems to be a ball of rage and will take his anger out wherever.
That's very true. And this is also during an era where he's like living like Alan Partridge in a travel tavern for a season. But I think it's actually the Four Seasons in Manchester or something like that, right? But I love that. I really enjoyed that.
I love him sort of like just padding down after the match into the residence bar.
Like the Irish pub that's built into the hotel.
That feels like the type of thing that would be in a very convenient sitcom. What if he just lives above an Irish pub? Can we write that in? Or is that a bit too... No.
And what if Dennis Irwin's mates are always there and they always need tickets? Which happens so much.
It's so weird.
I'm going to move us on to the big topics. No offense. It's not meant to be it's not a slight on the ones that you brought me today. I want to bring on to the two big things from this book. First of all, most people probably know this book for the Alpha Inge Haaland incident. Obviously, Alpha Inge Haaland, as Roy says, he did his cruciate, didn't he? Roy did his cruciate or something like that on the pitch. And Haaland stood over him, said like, oh, get up, he's faking it or something like that, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But, and then he kind of vowed to get him back for that and did so.
As somebody who really knew absolutely nothing about anything, this was my interpretation of it. oh, that guy was really horrible to him. And then a few matches later, he gave him a bit of a kick and he felt better about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was only when I finished reading it, I was talking to my uncle Jerry about it. And he said, oh, but he did end that guy's career. And I had no idea.
That's the other thing. It's really bad.
And it's, but also the thing that surprised me, because obviously that's the thing I knew was a big thing in this book, but it's not even a paragraph. It's like it's like two sentences. It goes, I've waited almost 180 minutes for Alfie. 3 years if you looked at it another way. Now he had the ball on the far touchline. Alfie was taking the piss. I waited long enough. I fucking hit him hard. The ball was there, brackets, I think. Take that, you C word, and don't, he writes the C word, I'm not going to say it, and don't ever stand over me again, sneer about fake injuries, and tell your pal Weatherall, David Weatherall, there's some for him as well, didn't wait for Mr. Ellery to show the card, I turned and walked to the dressing room. That's it, that's everything about it. It shows how much, like, so many things, I mean, obviously there are little bits here and there beforehand, but it shows how many of these kind of things he's involved in, these scrapes that, he only needs to dedicate two lines to that.
Am I right in thinking that when this book came out, he was then charged by the FA?
Yes,
it was clear here that he had meant to go in and injure him.
Yeah, I think that is the case. And I don't think Haaland actually retired by this point. I think he was probably still rehabilitating himself in some way. I can't remember how it worked. It was around,
but it's still he still, it's weird because like it's not. It's like the it's like if Ryan Shawcross wrote a book and then said like, and then I kicked Aaron Ramsey and whoops, it sort of conveyed here as like, oh, it's a bit of a hard tackle, but even if he hadn't yet retired, it's still like, well, I shattered his body.
Yeah, it is,
and there's no remorse.
No,
zero remorse.
None.
And it's worth also saying that, and this is something I hadn't realized because when we talked about it before, I thought that Haaland had tackled Roy. And that was the reason that Roy was angry.
Yeah.
It's not that.
No,
it's that Roy was getting annoyed at Haaland, so tried to tackle him horribly, and then did his knee, and then Haaland said, oh, get up. And then Roy was out for a few months, I think, because he injured himself, not because Haaland injured him. And then for that reason, Roy's like, well, I now must kill Alf Inge Haaland.
It's biblical, isn't it?
It is biblical.
Like Game of Thrones-esque.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it is
vengeance.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's extremely petty, I would say this case, but it is that. But then also, this is a real face off. I mean, obviously that one's a real face off. The guy had his legs were smashed up, but this is a real hefty battle that, as Gronje says, has kind of like shook up Ireland for a couple of years, and it took over the media world. I remember it being a huge thing at the time. We talked about it obviously a hell of a lot because it was, let's be honest, the only interesting thing in Mick McCarthy's World Cup diary. But it was very interesting in there. And I don't think Roy expresses any of it particularly differently to how Mick does, but he does fill in a few of the gaps. And he does it, and at least we see his side of it. But like everything still kind of lines up timeline wise. Like, you know, he starts off with him getting annoyed at him on that coach in 1992, wasn't it? I think we said on a trip where, remember, Andy said there was that good line where he says, like, wasn't it like McCarthy said, first impression's bad? And he said, like, first touch bad or something like that.
It was like first tour out, shit.
That was it.
First touch, shit.
That which was it.
Niall Quinn said that he said. But
which is really funny. But then Roy Keane says he didn't say anything that funny at all. He says, you're right out of order, you. Looking up, I saw Mick McCarthy, Captain Fantastic himself, glaring down at me. Go and fuck yourself, I told him. Much less funny.
That's not funny at all.
Yeah. So, yeah. I would take credit for that great line that Niall Quinn gave me for that. So then that happens, and then all the same things build. You know, he's fine with him during the qualifying period, but they're not particularly close, and he tries to get out of that Iran game by... He says similar lines about like how he didn't need to be there, so he didn't want to go. And then he gets
that's bonkers. That stuff where you're like, because 2-0 is not. He sort of talks about how 2-0 is like, it's probably enough. Like, Iran probably aren't going to score 3. I didn't think much of them. You're like, yes, but you are a professional and you should know that. Obviously you should play in the second leg, and obviously you should tell people you're not going to play in the second leg.
I agree.
If you're infuriating.
And then all the Japan stuff, like you mentioned before, they get there. The pitch is hard. They haven't got any of the equipment. Hasn't turned up. He talks about the special drink, Lucozade. He just calls it the special drink. Our special drink hasn't turned up on page 206. Like, what the hell?
I thought it was some like George's Marvis medicine.
Yeah.
Where's our special
Lucozade
drink?
Lucozade or Gatorade, as he calls it for some reason.
We're never going to be massive now.
We drink to become giant.
Drink me, hang around it. Yeah. and then, he talks quite frankly about how he does the interview. Kind of changes his mind. And then, whereas Mitt McCarthy doesn't really, he kind of just like censors everything. He says like, oh, he was effing and blinding and said all these things. Roy does give a bit more of an insight there. He says, you're a fucking wanker. I didn't rate you as a player. I don't rate you as a manager. I don't rate you as a person. You're a fucking wanker and you can stick your World Cup up your ass. I've got no respect for you. So that is...
That's in there.
He doesn't mince his words at all, does he? You really? I still think it's incredibly sneaky that he went to the press before.
Yes,
for a person
is.
Who's quite happy to like yell at people in public. I think the fact that he did an interview with the press and Mitt McCarthy had to do a whole awkward thing where it's like, have you got anything to tell the group? And then Roy says, it's like, he set me right up here. It's like, you set everyone up by going to the
exactly,
papers before.
That I think there's something really weird about Roy here, which because what's also interesting, they have the interview at the end of the book and you can read the interview yourself. And it's mad reading that thinking, if Roy gave that interview thinking that it was going to be interpreted any other way apart from how it was, it's bananas to think that like it was just, you know, some hard truths. You're like, you're on the eve of the World Cup and you're basically saying like my players are shit and the preparation's been shit and all the rest of it. Like it, like obviously you should know something's going to come out of that. It's bananas to think it wouldn't, and it's naive to think it wouldn't. So
I totally agree. Gronje, have you got any? I can defend him.
What I found absolutely fascinating was he printed this interview as sort of a vindication. And
at the back of the book?
And then here are two of the questions. I won't have the answers, but the subtext here, the journalist asks him, why are the highs higher for you and the lows lower?
I thought this was fascinating.
And the next question is, do you get depressed?
Yes. But I actually thought his responses to those were really, really good. Actually, really, really insightful. What do you say? I try to get to level pegging. I don't want that, the highs and lows. I react. That's the way I am. That's what made me what I am, good and bad. But I like me. I do like me. I don't think I'm a bad person. In my life, I'm trying to get things level. When I was younger, I was up and down like a roller coaster. I was up, out, in headlines, injured and winning trophies, high up, low down. I'm trying to get things down, accepting things. There's only so much you can accept. I thought that was brilliant. I think that's a really great example. And then the depression, he says,
I don't think it backs up in the book, personally, but that's just...
Yeah. I think it is there, a little bit in between it, but I do know what you mean.
Can I just say, on his behaviour in Saipan, he's been chaotic, he's in his feelings, and I think he's just so frustrated. I think it's bottling up, it's bottling up. We've been on this journey with this man. We know he's not very good at expressing his feelings. He's incredibly hard on himself. He's incredibly driven. He's missed, you know, one of the biggest matches of his career. I can never remember, the Premier Cup final.
Champions League final. Close.
Champions League final. Yeah. And he feels, and it's, FAI is a mess. It is an absolute mess. It is a clown show. And I think it just got too much for him. I think he just got completely overwhelmed. And I think he got, you know, that feeling where it all gets too much for you and you're about to send an email that you really regret, but it will feel amazing when you send it. And he just sent that email. And I respect the purity of his passion and how he's feeling. He really cared. And yes, it was messy and he was self-sabotaging. But he cared.
I agree. He did care, but he could have done it to the rest of the team. He could have done it in front of them. Exactly. He could have done it with Mick. He could have taken Mick to one side and properly done it with him and then brought it up with the team. If it really got to a thing, at least bring it in front of them and not to a journalist, I would say.
And also the thing that I think is upsetting is because it is a team sport, like that kind of like that attitude, which I think is fair, is the kind of thing that works. You know, you can sabotage your own career, fine, but it's a World Cup for Ireland. It's a World Cup for, you know, 22 other players.
And a country.
That kind of and a country. Like, it is, you know, there's a lot of pressure on these guys, but either you bottle it up for these 6 weeks and you swallow it down, or you say, I'm sorry, I can't do it beforehand. It was doing it in the actual World Cup itself. And in
like,
sort of...
the French team in 2010, wasn't it? I think
just that kind of massive, like, self-sabotage is sort of bonkers to me. But I also, like, because I definitely understand it, but I also think there's a level of it which is that... In a way, again, to go back to this idea that Roy kind of creates the narrative and then the facts are then like extraneous to back it up. But like the thing is that Ireland did really well at that World Cup. They got to they nearly got to the quarterfinals. Mm-hmm. If they hadn't, you know, lost had an unlucky lost to penalty shootouts to Spain. Like, I think that for Roy, he's sort of, in a way, it's self-perpetuating. Mm-hmm. The idea of, like, if I explode things now, then they will lose against Cameroon, and then I'll be vindicated.
Yeah.
And I think that's the really nasty thing about it that I can't, like, shake. This idea that, like, that he's sort of willing them to... I can't get past the idea that I think he's sort of willing them to fail.
Agreed.
So that he can be justified in that narrative that he's created for himself in his head.
That is true. So, Jack, I'm assuming your team, Mick. Gronje, I think your team, Roy, right?
I'm 100%. We're all, look, in our darkest moments, we're all Roy Keane.
I agree with that. I feel like I'm more like Roy Keane, but I want to be more like Mick, I think, to an extent. Mick has dealt with it a lot better, I think. But overall, that is kind of at the end of the book. That is the big thing in there. Did the book change you? And can I get a rating out of 10? Gronje, did it change you?
Yeah, it did.
Go on.
100%.
Yeah, the fact that you read it so fast and you... All the way through, you were messaging me telling me how much you enjoyed it, which, like I say, is such a rare experience for this podcast.
Wow.
It's usually like, what have you made me do? I'm 3 pages in and I hate every second of my life.
I just identified so much with him. Mm-hmm. I really do. He's like, the fact, and just go back to Saipan, like he completely did that thing that we all do when we're really in our feelings, doing the worst thing. Mm-hmm. Last minute, we get sanctimonious and think, do you know what? I'm not just doing it for myself. I'm doing it for everybody.
Yeah. 100%. 100%.
He did it. And he just can't see the demons that are driving on and are ultimately destroying him. And he just couldn't see it. And I just think Shakespearean. This is Shakespeare.
That's 10 out of 10. Oh my word.
10 out of 10. Bloody hell.
I think probably Law of Averages has probably already beaten Mick McCarthy just with that. Not quite, actually.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I had to give it extremely. Jack, I think you're going to give it a much lower score. Although I think Gronje's won you over a little bit.
She has. I think Gronje has won me over in the sense that I think if I was able to take a step back from it, I can see that sort of like meta. Mm-hmm. I feel almost infected by his own rage that makes me really angry about this whole thing.
Go with your heart. What's the score?
It's a 4.
4? What a polarizing book. This is like Michael Owen number 3 all over again.
I just wanted more joy. I just needed joy in there. Give me joy, please.
Roy Keane. Joy.
Yeah, you're looking in the wrong place, man.
Joy Keane.
You're looking. Oh, yeah, okay. All right, I guess that's very good. That's the joke of the day. I'm going to give it...
honest failure than defeat. Can I just say... No, what's the one... No, he said some phrase, and I thought it was really profound. And Mel said it's one of the most cliched football phrases there is.
It's like, game of two halves.
He said, I would rather fail trying than concede defeat. That's
okay.
It.
Okay.
Or is it fail to prepare, prepare to fail?
Yeah, that's what my PE teacher used to say to me all the time. And I failed. I'm going to give.
I wasn't prepared.
I think as long as I give it a score over 2, it beats Mick McCarthy. And I am going to give it a score over 2. I'm going to give it an 8. I thought it was really good. I thought it was a very good book. Not the best I've read so far. It still was a bit too Rooney-like at times. It was really good. So that gives might be the best this series. 18, 22 divided by 3, 7.33. Oof.
Oh my God.
Very high. Sorry, Mick McCarthy, but overall,
look how happy
Roy has beaten you by 3 points. Yeah, he does look.
What is going on?
Actually, yeah, he is smiling on the back of the book. That is, he's angry at the front, and then when the book's over, he's happy on the back.
Yeah, like all things with Roy.
Comedy and tragedy masks.
Yeah, this week on the quiz, you are both named after the only two things Roy seems to like in the book. Gronje, you're the British Airways air hostesses, who were very nice to him on the way back from Ireland.
Yeah.
And Jack, you're Triggs the dog.
Of course. Good. I'll take that.
So shout out your name if you think you know the answer. Question number 1. What show does Roy watch on DVD when he flies back from Japan in disgrace?
Oh, no.
Only Fools and Horses.
You got to say your name first.
But that's Patricia.
Wrong. Patricia?
Sinead. Yeah.
British Airways air hostesses is your name, but okay, fine. Okay,
I thought I had to give her a name. I gave her the name Patricia.
Your name is just British Airways hostess. But you can go say Patricia. Why not? Patricia.
It's British Airways stewardess. Only Fools and Horses.
Not correct, I'm afraid.
Triggs. Faulty Towers.
Is correct. You're very close there, Gronje. Yeah, it is that. Good old Basil, he could manage Ireland. He says, could he?
Ugh.
How about that? Number two, what football club did Roy support as a boy?
Oh, Triggs.
Yep.
Spurs.
It is, and he still supports them today, apparently. Even though he's very mean.
Ugh.
Ugh. Three.
See, that's why he's so stressed and depressed.
I agree. That's the real hidden meaning behind
it. That's probably why I hate him. Yeah.
Coming to number three. Who would Roy fantasize about when lying in bed before making it as a footballer?
Triggs.
Yep.
Kylie?
It is Kylie. Jack is
because he wouldn't stop watching Neighbours.
He wouldn't stop watching Neighbours. Both books. That's the one connecting factor between Mick McCarthy and Roy.
Neighbours could bring them together.
Yeah, they could have just talked about how much they love Neighbours. Or how much, you know, it was Jason McAteer and Roy would have been brought by that. Question number four. Three things. There's three answers here. What three things does Roy say dietitians recommend these days? I've mentioned two of them already.
Cheese sandwiches?
Not correct. Very not correct.
Triggs.
Yeah.
Pasta?
Yeah, pasta's one. One's a drink.
Not Lucas.
Special
Lucas-Aid.
Drink.
What's another word for it?
Oh, isotonic sports drink.
No. They got more. The American. There we go. Gronje's got a point. Ah. Yep. Gronje. It's a point. And one more. It's a general thing. It's not vegetables. It's
salad.
No.
Fruit.
Fruit is the answer. That'd be a good advert for salad. It's not vegetables, it's salad.
Why isn't it vegetables? They are vegetables, aren't they?
And finally, which footballer does Roy describe as 19 going on 90?
Oh, Triggs.
Yep.
Gary Neville.
Oh my. Gronje, he has got the advantage of having read the book today, though, whereas we were good kids and read it at Christmas. So there we go. I read it on Boxing Day, same as Mick McCarthy. Had a really boring day. Jack, you've smashed it there. I'm sorry, Gronje. But you both get rewarded with a dramatic reading. Roy Keane goes watch shopping with Lee Sharp. can someone cue the dramatic music, please?
Gronje, you got to do it.
You can do that for the whole thing, but if you just want to say cue dramatic music, that'd also be great.
Both work.
Cue dramatic music.
Thank you very much. Feeling flush with recently acquired success and the bonuses that went with it, I decided to treat myself to an expensive watch. Lee Sharp was the man to see when looking for a good deal on clothes, cards, even watches. Lee always knew a man who'd see you right. He took me to a select jeweler's in town. This is my mate Roy, he's looking for a watch. No problem, said Lee's pal, as he produced a selection from beneath the counter where the unvoiced understanding hinted the good stuff was kept for special customers. What a weird sentence that is.
Yeah. What also like, are they made of cocaine? What are they?
The choice narrowed down to three, all nice, all fairly expensive, but in my price range. Try not to appear too concerned about price. I nevertheless noted that one cost $2,000, another $1,800, the third $1,100. I was impressed when the jeweler suggested that the $1,100 watch was the one I should choose. Fair play to him. It earned less commission, saying the least expensive of the three. Well done, Lee, I thought, as I produced my credit card. However, when Lee's pal returned with the receipt for my signature, I felt sick. Really sick. The bill was £11,000. Footballers weren't earning what they earned those days.
That's true. It's a lot of money. Regardless of what you earn, it's a lot of money.
He could have bought tickets for a whole season for everyone in Ireland for 11 grand.
Once
probably.
Again,
that's a lot.
He's turned treating himself into the most anxious stream.
Yes.
This is very Uncut Gems, this bit. This is him going to the pawn shop. Kind of second of that. I'd misread the price tag. Now, with pride at stake, I didn't bottle it. Not much. I bottled it in a big way. Instead of explaining that there'd been an expensive mistake, I signed the receipt like a man.
I don't understand what his definition of a man is here.
He signed it with a steak knife.
Yeah. But a man signing like for an £11,000 watch as being like, oh, that's very man. That's a very manly thing to do.
Yeah, sounded like a man. outside the shop, I confessed to Lee, Jesus, my dad's on the dole in Cork and I'm spending 11 grand on a fucking watch. Lee broke up laughing. Okay, I beg, don't tell the lads. No, Roy, no way, Lee assured me. I won't say a word. Guess what? He told everyone. Couldn't wait and I couldn't blame him. The story kept the dressing room in good humour for days. How's that watch, Roy? Keep in time. Very good.
Oh, God. Roy.
Oh, Roy. That is all for this week's episode. But we'll be back in a fortnight. If you can't wait that long, join the Book Club Club on Patreon. Bookworm members of the club get a brand new episode, a bonus chapter every other week where we chat even more about the book. It's £3.50 to join. Please do, or just support us for a quid. Head to patreon.com/footballbookclub. In the meantime, do get in touch with us at Footy Book Club on X, Instagram. I called it X for the first time. Whoa. At Football Book Club on Instagram. That didn't go down well. Send us your thoughts, your author footballer puns, your Ken Zone requests. Gronja, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's been a joy to read the book with you. Anything to plug?
If you're a fan of rich people making very self-destructive choices, you will love...
Yep.
My podcast, The Way They Were.
Yes.
All about celebrity breakups. And we actually had a sort of semi-football themed episode when your podcast very own Jackie Bernhardt appeared.
Oh, friend of the show, Jack Bernhardt. Yeah.
How dare
friend
you?
Of the show. And I know it was Danny Bear. So who was Danny Bear? Danny Bear?
Oh, Les Ferdinand.
Les Ferdinand. Yeah.
Les Ferdinand. Yeah. We did a whole deep dive into their relationship and split.
The amount of research that Gronja did on that is incredible. Like, she went to a library. Amazing.
Everything. Wow. Yeah, I know you do put a lot of research into that. And definitely listen. It's a great podcast.
It's really funny. So much fun.
Shame we don't know much about Roy Keane's partner. That'd be a... Now that you know so much about Roy, it'd be perfect. You could do Roy Keane and Mick McCarthy on The Way They Were.
That's basically been this podcast, really.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Thank you so much, everyone. Any last words?
Do 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 dramatic reading.
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Jack Bernhardt, and Gronja Maguire. It was produced and created by James Bug. The theme music, Hills Behind, is the work of Silent Partner and is used in the Creative Commons 4.0 license. Thanks to Roy for writing the book. We'll see you with a brand new autobiography in 2 weeks. See you then.
Hello, I'm Gronja Maguire, and this is Chantelle for Dooch and Pate.
Hello.
Bonded over our love of reminiscing about weird celebrity couples. The ones no one would believe happened if Google wasn't there to back it up.
We want you to join us as we remember when love was young, times were simpler, and we really thought that Angelina and Billy Bob Thornton were going to make it.
Every week we're joined by a celebrity guest to discuss the showbiz romance they never got over.
I'm loving the premise of this podcast. I think this is what we all need to be talking about at the moment.
Nobody can beat the Beckhams in terms of unions. No one in the world. Everything about the Beckhams is insane.
This is the most fun we've ever had. I feel like I'm literally 12 again. My mum calling me in for dinner and I'm being like, no.
So take our hand and stroll down memory lane with us as we remember
the way they were.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.